Archibald looked around, verifying that Emin and I were the only ones in the kitchen. "As a member of an ascetic, cloistered, contemplative order myself," he said, "I probably ought not level such criticisms against the poor Matterites."
"Oh, go ahead," Emin said.
He was gamely trying to repair the ruptured casserole. "All right, since you insist," said Archibald. Protecting his hand with a fold of his bolt, he lifted the lid from the stewpot to divulge a bubbling morass of expired weeds laced with dangerous-looking carapaces. "I think it's taking things just a little too far to selectively breed over a period of millennia foodstuffs that are offensive to all non-Matterites. I'll bet it's one of those not-as-bad-as-it-looks, sounds, feels, and smells type of things," I said, holding my breath and approaching the pot.
"How much?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"How much do you bet?"
"Are you suggesting we try it?"
"I'm suggesting you try it."
"Why only me?"
"Because you proposed the wager, and you are the Theor."
"What does that make you?"
"A scholar."
"So you'll take notes of my symptoms? Design my stained glass window after I'm dead?"
"Yes, we'll place it right there," Archibald said, pointing to a smoke hole in the wall, about the size of my hand.
Emin had drifted closer. Carvel and Triss had come in from the Messalin and were standing very close to each other, watching. Being watched by females changed everything.
"What is the wager?" I said.
"I am back down to 3 possessions."
And it was one of the oldest rules in the Mathic world that we weren't allowed to wager the bolt, cord, and sphere.
"Winner doesn't have to clean up tonight," Archibald proposed.
"Done," I said.
This was easy. All I had to do to win the bet was to claim it wasn't that bad and not throw up. At least, not in front of Archibald. And even if I lost, I got all kinds of childish satisfaction out of Triss and Carvel's exquisitely horrified reactions as I fished something out of the pulp and put it in my mouth. It was a cube of, I guessed, some curd-like fermented substance, tangled up in wilted fronds, flecked with a few crunchy shards. While I was pursuing the latter with my tongue, the fronds slipped halfway down my gullet and made me swallow convulsively. They dragged the cube down with them, like seaweed killing a swimmer. I had to do a bit of coughing and gagging to get the vegetable matter back up into my mouth where I could chew it decently. This added some drama to the proceedings and made it that much more entertaining to the others. I held up a hand, signaling that all was well, and took my time chewing what was left. Didn't want my innards slashed up by the sharp bits. Finally, it all went down in a greasy, fibrous, thorny tangle. I put the odds at 60-40 that it wouldn't be coming back up.
"You know," I claimed, "it's not that much worse than just standing over the pot and wondering."
"What's it taste like?" Triss asked.
"Ever put your tongue across battery terminals?"
"No, I've never even seen a battery."
"Hmm. Now, as to the wager," Archibald said uncertainly.
"Yes," I said.
"Good luck with cleanup.
Put your back into it when you're taking care of those casseroles, will you?"
Before Archibald could argue the point, his bell rang. Triss and Carvel were laughing at the look on his face as he slunk out of the kitchen.
In the Messalin, the Doynes had been asking Javarn, much more circumspectly, about his food, but now Fra Paflagon took the bit in his teeth again.
"Like cosmographers who sleep at day and work at night because that is when the stars can be seen, we are going to have to toil in the laboratory of consciousness, which is the only setting we know of where the effects of the Hylian flow are observable."
And then he muttered something to Archibald.
Then he added,
"Though instead of one single HTW, we should now speak of the wick instead. The flow percolates through a complex network of cosmi more theoric than or prior to ours."
Archibald returned to the kitchen.
"Paflagon doesn't want me. He wants you."
"Why would he want me?" I asked.
"I can't be sure," Archibald said. "But I was chatting with him yesterday and mentioned some of the conversations you had with Orlo."
"Oh, thanks a lot."
"So pick the shrapnel out of your teeth and get in there."
And that was how I came to spend the entire main course recounting my 2 Ekba dialogues with Orlo. The first about how, according to him, consciousness was all about the rapid and fluent creation of counterfactual worlds inside the brain, and the second in which he argued
that this was not merely possible, not merely plausible, but in fact easy if one thought of consciousness as spanning an ensemble of slightly different versions of the brain, each keeping track of a slightly different cosmos. Paphlagon ended up saying it better.
If hemmed space is the landscape and one cosmos is a single geometric point in it, then a given consciousness is a spot of light moving, like a searchlight beam, over that landscape, brightly illuminating a set of points of cosmi that are close together, with a penumbra that rapidly feathers away to darkness at the edges. In the bright center of the beam, crosstalk occurs among many variants of the brain. Fewer contributions come in from the half-lit periphery, and none from the shadows beyond.
I gratefully stepped back against the wall, trying to fade into some shadows myself.
I am indebted to Fra Erasmus for allowing us to sit and eat, when so often we must interrupt our comestion with actual talk,
Lodegear finally said.
Perhaps we ought to trade places and allow the servitors to sit and eat in silence while they are lectured by doyens.
Barb cackled. He had lately been showing more and more relish for Lodegear's wit, furnishing me with the disturbing insight that perhaps Lodegear was just a barb who had become old.